broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at Podbay 2A at Intergalactic Prairie Studios in the Alpha Centauri region. I'm your host, Mr. Michael Dean, going all the way back to 1964. Here's a snappy little number called Davy Barker. Introduce yourself, please.
Hey, how's it going? This is Davy Barker, also known as the Shiny Badger. And you're listening to the Freedom Fiends. How's it going, Michael?
Yes, we're being very quiet because our wives are asleep and we don't want to wake them because we're good men.
My wife's not asleep. Oh. I can yell all I want.
Okay, well, you can have all the energy that I can't have live here. So you're complaining about my, well, not complaining. You made an interesting observation about my tech support over the phone when I was helping walk you through the latest beta version of Fiend Phone, and your computer was balking. First of all, your computer was balking because you had Skype running, and Skype. You know, a lot of people...
It almost sounds like something you can't say on radio.
I know. Cannot touch your Skype, baby. Yes, a lot of people go and complain on the radio or on the internet about like this software program or that software program. But the thing is, we actually have a solution, so we can do that. Anybody can do it, but we don't sound as silly. So Skype, interestingly enough, always runs in the background. And for some reason, I don't know if it's by design or not, but it interferes with other voice over internet programs. Makes it hard to install them or run them.
It makes them run poorly, so you think Skype is the only one that works well.
Socialism for internet phone calls. Nah, I can't. I don't know. Skype does... Skype is useful and kind of broke ground. And, you know, your grandma has it. She doesn't have Fiend Phone yet, so you can still use it. That's true. You can still use it to call your grandma. But it runs in the background. Like, when you close the program, it's not closed. If you go into your system tray, there's a little icon running there, and you have to right-click on it and close it, or you can do it from the processes window.
You know... They do what all big software eventually does, and that is they go from being opt-in to being opt-out. And you know, apparently, I didn't even know this, but apparently the last time that Skype like forced me to reinstall all their updates without asking me in the middle of a conversation, they put themselves in my start menu so that Skype starts on its own without being asked.
Yeah.
And Skype doesn't know. I don't need that.
And what did you say about there was a notification that was ignored, or was that iTunes?
Oh, yeah, the iTunes does a similar thing. These things, they try to take over your computer. So iTunes has this regular message that pops up that says, like, we just noticed that we're not your default media player. Would you like to change that? And I always say no. And I always say, no, I don't want to install the updates. I like your software the way it's running. Please don't change it for me. And then there's a box at the bottom that says, don't show me this notification again. And that doesn't do anything. That's just there to make you feel better.
So Apple just doesn't understand that no means no, apparently. There's some show, I can't remember if it was House of Cards or something, or maybe some cop show I was watching, but there was some hacker that the government had in shackles and, you know, were using against other hackers like they often do. And one of the things that he'd been arrested for, you know, it wasn't like, it's usually a victimless crime what they charge those guys for, and, you know, threaten them with 75 years in prison unless they become, you know, workers for the Borg.
It's usually some absurd charge like obstructing justice because they like misremembered something they told the FBI.
Yeah, yeah. But one of the things this guy was charged for was reprogramming military drones to shoot missiles at Apple's Cupertino headquarters because he didn't like the new electronic service agreement of iTunes.
This is in House of Cards?
I don't know what it's in. It's in something I saw.
That's not a true story, right?
No, but it was kind of a funny writing on TV, you know. But and I don't recommend doing that at all. I want to make that clear. But people, you know, it's weird when there's these software services that are wonderful and they bring you all these wonderful things, great things. And then they kind of try to keep you in their jail. You know, Richard Stallman, one of the three main co-inventors of Linux, or as he calls it, GNU/Linux operating system, also known as Linux, to people who aren't sticklers for you must use the king's language. He has said something really, really funny that I liked. And, you know, I'm getting a lot of this like Apple versus Mac arguing lately from people because we're putting out a program that at this moment is PC only, and people are yelling, you must make a Mac version, you know, like as if there's a button you can press that says make Mac version. There's not. And or people say like, you shouldn't make it. You made it for Windows. That's Square. You should make it for Linux. And, you know, they don't understand the architecture of designing a program that's never been done and doing it from the ground up on no money. And if you want to make a donation, go to fiendphone.com and go to our Indiegogo and make a donation. But you know, Davi and I are talking over this software right now. He is talking to me via Fiend Phone, and it sounds better than Skype. And my friend Derek Slopey did the programming on it, and he and I designed it together, and it sounds better than Skype. It's much better for doing radio or podcasting. But people expect you to just, you know, make my version, because I'm all for the, you know, free software. Anybody should be able to do with anything with something you put out. It's a good license to put on your own stuff. But I really hate that it has kind of encouraged this culture of gimme, gimme, gimmeism. You know, it's almost leftist, or it's absolutely leftist. Like,
it's totally left. It's all demand and no supply. I mean, yeah. That's the left. That's socialism in a nutshell.
Yeah. And, but Richard Stallman said this thing that I really like, and it's one of the, you know, a lot of people have these arguments of like, oh, Linux is great, Microsoft is horrible. But they don't really understand it. Most of those people really don't understand Linux very well. They're just using it because their friend said it's cool. Or the worst one is the people who say Mac is better than PC. That's like, that was true about 25 years ago, but now you can pretty much get the same computer for 2/3 the price, you know, the same power for 2/3 the price in a PC. The case won't be as sexy and as cute and as liberal artistic looking, but you know, it'll run better, and you can get software for it easier and cheaper and freer. But the thing that he said, that Stallman said, that I really agree with about Mac is he said, Steve Jobs made jail cool. Now grok that statement for a second, because really, like, the only time I ever have problems, and let me know if you have this, you use PCs, you deal with people sending you files for graphic arts they're hiring you for. I do the same with video and audio. When people on Linux send me something, it's never a problem. When people on PC send me something, it's never a problem. When people on Mac send me something, I can almost invariably not open it. Do you have that problem too?
I've had that problem. It seems like this is less of a problem now than it was like 5 or 10 absolutely, years ago. It used absolutely to be completely impossible, especially like I migrated over from Apple to PC when I graduated from college. And a lot of those files, they're sitting on a like a zip disk somewhere, never going to be able to open them.
when you graduated from Apple, when you graduated from college, you grew up and got a PC.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I grew up and got a PC. Well, I come from an interfaith family. You know, my mom's side of the family is PC. My dad's side of the family is Apple. So I was familiar with both as a kid.
Do you have a weird uncle that's on Linux?
My brother is kind of into that sort of thing. I think he's PC ultimately, but he's capable with Linux, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I'm getting, every time Derek and I roll out some new software, you know, we found this with Meowbit. We're finding it a lot more with FiendPhone, because more people are actually adopting FiendPhone 5 days in here now, than, you know, like more people have adopted it 5 days in than had adopted Meowbit after like 3 months, because, you know, it's more useful for immediate use rather than this might save me from government intervention years from now. You know, it's a pays you immediately in results rather than it's like stockpiling internets for later, which is what Meowbit was. So, right. But every time we roll something out, like half the comments we get are these like, gimme, 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 like cool program, man, but you need to make it for Android. I'm like, gee, we never considered that, you know, like it's on our list of things we'd like to do if we ever had enough money, or really what we need to do is just raise a little more money and develop the heck out of the PC version until it's really, really a killer program that anybody can use without being a techie. And then all the functionality will be defined, and like Linux people will just go, yeah, I'm going to make a Linux version of that. Like we won't even need to, they won't even tell us about it. We'll just find it on the internet. You know, that's how it really works with open source stuff. So
yeah.
Yeah. So Squares, man, it's so Square to this gimme, gimme, gimmeism. I'm tired of it, but you made a comment about my tech support on the phone. What was it?
Yeah, I said and I appreciate this. This was an attack of any kind. It's that you talk like a technical manual. And what I mean is, like, when we were connecting, you didn't just say, okay, and now connect. You said, now click connect. And when I was having problems, you didn't say open your task manager. You said push, control, alt, and delete at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's like, some of that might sound like wordy and superfluous or whatever, but at the same time, like, it leaves nothing to the imagination, right? Like, it makes everything perfectly clear and idiot proof.
Well, it's
and I'm often an idiot, so I appreciate that.
Well, it's basically because I have written over 300,000 published pages of tech manual speak like that. And, you know, with the $30 film school, $30 music school, and $30 writing school, and then, you know, some other stuff. So I've probably written upwards of 500,000, not pages, 500,000 words that have been published by major corporations, you know, and I'm not bragging or saying that makes them good, but I'm saying, like, that means that someone else thought they were good enough tech writing to publish them and pay money and then pay me to do it. So, you know, I've done enough of that kind of work that I've never noticed that I do that. But now that you point it out, I do. I've kind of, like, brainwashed myself.
Oh, it's a skill.
It's a skill, man.
Well, I get it completely, because I used to work in an art department for a screen printer, and I essentially wrote tutorials for the other people in the department, since I was the one who was most skilled with the software. And so whenever I had to do something new, or whenever somebody came to me with a problem they didn't know how to do, like, my next project was to write the tutorial for that problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though they weren't published anywhere, they're at least used in that art department.
It's a mixed blessing, man, because, you know, when you're the person that can walk people through computer stuff, people expect it of you. I say it's a skill worth having and hiding. Did you use Quark back in the day?
I did. My first student magazine on Quark Express.
Did you ever work with a company that sold Quark extensions in San Francisco called Exchange?
I don't think so. It doesn't sound familiar.
I used to be a salesman there. I was the first person gutted when they brought in the seagull manager, the hacksaw manager, chainsaw manager to gut the place. Talk about that when we come back.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Came into the woods, many of the trees said, at least the handle is one of us. That's a Turkish that's a Turkish proverb. You like that, Davi?
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's like you've heard the expression, for every 100 people striking at the tree of evil, only one is striking at the root.
Yeah, that's the extrapolation of that.
Well, my extrapolation from that is, for every 100 people striking at the root, only one realizes that the branch is cut from the same tree.
Yeah, there you go. Let me say it again, though. When the axe came into the woods, many of the trees said, at least the handle is one of us.
That's so great.
That is great, man.
So Barack, what is that? You said it's a Turkish proverb?
It's a Turkish proverb. So, yeah. So Barack Obama is a socialist, a liar, and his feet stink. Same with George Bush.
Yep.
But we want to talk about fun things. We want to talk about seagull managers, chainsaw managers, to go back to wood chopping, and prairie dogging. And no, that's not a marital act outlawed in 23 states in the District of Columbia. Do you know what?
what is it?
Prairie dogging is it's kind of comical. It's when you work in a cube farm, which is another word that goes along with this, a cubicle farm, as I was when I was working at Exchange in San Francisco.
Oh, I have heard of this.
Yeah, prairie dogging is when somebody makes a loud noise in a cubicle farm, a cube farm, and everyone pops their head up to look around. It's like prairie dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I worked at this company. They were evil, man. They fired me. They're not evil because they fired me. They're evil because here's what happened. Quark, which was the first really kick butt page layout program. I still use it for books and see DVD covers and CD covers and things like that for page layout. And so there were a lot of people who were making their living working at home using Quark. Like all of a sudden they were like a lot of people I would do sales calls to were like, you know, stay at home moms doing Quark. And I could hear like the kids in the background. So it was kind of this cottage industry of people who like were making a lot of money and people who worked in doing pre-press and print shops like Davi did. You know, it was a revolution, an early killer app for computers. And a killer app is like an application that's so important, you go buy a computer or a particular computer to run it. And Quark really was that for a lot of people. And I'm saying that Fiendphone is that too. Like, you know, if you're a podcaster or a radio person and you don't have a Mac, if you're on Mac or Linux and you don't have a PC, I would say go spend $100 and buy a used PC to run Fiendphone, because it basically replaces like $1,400 pieces of equipment that you need two of, you know. So it's a killer app, man. But
I mean, even like the first writing I ever published was on a student magazine that I used Quark for. So
yeah. So I worked for this company that sold extensions for Quark, and Quark was a program that one of the reasons people really liked it was that program, they allowed programmers to write things that interfaced with it, you know? So if you didn't have to wait for the next version of it, you would just buy this extension for a few $100 and people would buy them because they needed, you know, needed something that would repaginate Turkish or things like that for books. And, you know, I worked at this company. All they did was sell extensions for Quark. Now, there's a lot of business lessons in this. One is don't have a company that only sells something for one program. Basically, what happened was Quark 4.0 came out, and it pretty much had every single extension that we sold free as a drop-down menu, like built into it. Like, you know, mm-hmm. they went out and bought all of these from programmers and also like just, you know, reverse engineered them and made the same kind of functionality. And there were rumors that this was going to happen. And I got hired like 6 months before this happened, worked there for like 5 months. And like people, I was doing tech support too. And or like routing people to tech support, like the triage for tech support. And people would call and they'd be like, you like that? I like that. They would call up and they'd be like, is it true? Is Quark 4.0 going to have all these extensions in it? Because I was going to buy this today, but I hear it's coming out next week and it might have this in it.
Wow.
The owner of the company had a really close relationship with the people that made Quark. So they probably knew whatever was going to happen. But they instructed us to just say to people, no, whatever extension they're talking about, I was supposed to say, nope, it's not going to be in 4.0. That was part of my job. And I didn't know. Like, I didn't know if I was lying or not. Like, I was like, I have no idea, man. And
that's like when I used to sell Beanie Babies and I was instructed to tell people that the things were retired.
We'll be back with more of the planned obsolescence that is the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the vibrant free market.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create Fiendphone. I'm using Fiendphone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiendphone.
Fiendphone is free, open-source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of Fiendphone right now at fiendphone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiendphone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set Liberty back 2,500 years.
That's fiendphone.com, FENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiendphone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Freedom Fiends. Yep. So we're talking about office space kind of stuff. Cube farms, prairie dogging, seagull managers, chainsaw managers. So I was working at Exchange in San Francisco. They don't exist anymore, so I don't have any problem talking ill of them. And this was like 20 years ago. So it was my first like real office job, you know, like I was a drug addict and a bike messenger, rock and roller, made money doing all those. Well, I lost money being a drug addict. So, then I got sober and then I went to community college for a year, learned to use computers, and then went and, temped in offices in San Francisco, wearing a suit, doing data entry, things like that, reception in law firms. And, then I got this job through a buddy of mine, being a salesman at Exchange, which was, you know, it's pretty good. It was like the best money I ever made. It was like $4 or $5 an hour over minimum wage plus, you know, commissions. But, I didn't do very well as a salesman. So I was one of the, cause I don't like bothering people. Here's why I don't have money to do like the stuff I do when other people in Liberty, you know, like Adam Kokesh, God bless him, but he could literally like fart and do an Indiegogo campaign and get like $20,000 in a day. You know, I'm changing the world, and we got $350 so far. We got a $100 donation today. Blew my mind, made my week. If you want to make if you want to help a brain starved man child in Wyoming,
adopt a libertarian. Libertarians all over America are struggling to be politically active. Okay,
we need to make an ad like that. We need to make an ad like that for libertarian welfare queens. I'm putting that on the list.
Well, your adopted libertarian will like your posts on Facebook.
That's going to be the next parody ad. You and I are going to write that tomorrow. All right. That's awesome. All right. So, I was working at Exchange, and this is one of the most evil things I've ever seen a company do. So I'm working there, and people are like, the guy who does the shipping, there's one guy that does the shipping. He also does the tech support and shipping. We're talking actually like mailing out discs, you know, like this is before you could download large files on the internet. So they're mailing out discs, pushing little silver platens around the universe. And that guy's also doing the tech support. There are two guys doing shipping, but one of them also did tech support. So as they are gutting this company, because they probably know that Quark 4.0 coming out in a couple weeks is going to basically wipe out their entire product line.
They're working on their exit strategy to make sure they don't have to pay out pensions or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
Like basically they fired all of the salesmen, including me, except one who was really like, who would just lie to anybody, you know? And they were having, before they fired me and had their seagull managers, which are the kind you don't see very often, but then they kind of come in, squawk, make a bunch of noise, poop all over the place, and then fly away. That was all the managers there. But then they brought in a chainsaw manager, which is another word for an exit consultant. Like they bring them in and they decide like who to fire and how to fire him and how humiliating to fire him so they don't try to sue or anything or whatever. Like
just the office space guys. What would you say you do here?
They brought that guy in and fired me. But before they fired me, they were having like, when people would call for tech support, you know, I'd see what they wanted. Then I'd call up the tech support guy, and he was always at lunch. He was taking longer and longer and longer lunches. And I'd be like, well, he's at lunch. Let me put you to voicemail. And the people were getting increasingly upset because he wasn't calling him back. So they fired me. And then like 3 weeks later, I talked to my one friend that still worked there who got fired the last day and was probably in on it, drinking champagne, toasting them like, ha ha ha, we pillaged. And that guy told me that they had fired the tech support guy 2 weeks before they fired me. So I was sending people to voicemail for tech support who never got it. Yeah.
Well, I guess, yeah. I mean, if you're planning on going out of business, then who cares if your customers leave messages, right?
I don't know. Yeah, it was evil. It was really evil, man. So what do you got, brother?
I mean, I had a similar situation. I mean, it wasn't a chainsaw guy, but it was definitely a cost-saving measure or whatever. But I essentially trained myself out of a job. I was the best educated person in an art department. I knew the software better than anyone else. And so my job was whenever someone else in the art department came to me with a question they couldn't figure out, I was to write a tutorial so that all of the other people in the department could learn from that question that that person had. And once I was done with all the tutorials, I was laid off. And that's... Yeah. It's, you know, it's okay though. A lot of people in my life were like shocked and thought I should be upset and people even suggested that I like seek some sort of legal whatever. And I'm like, nah, man, it's just, that's the way life goes.
It is.
Sometimes losing your job is the best thing that can happen to you. And I mean, in my case it was because now I'm full-time self-employed and,
the thing that ever happened to me. The thing is too, that a lot of like information about how to do things used to be very proprietary. Like it used to be, you had to apprentice somewhere to learn something. And then it became, you know, you had to buy books to learn something. And now it's to the point where, like, anything you want to do, you can search on Google, you know, how do I speak Turkish? You know, how do I use a chainsaw? I literally learned to use a chainsaw watching YouTube. And
now you just have to resist Facebook long enough to learn something.
Yeah,
to
man,
learn
something. Facebook is horrible. It really is. But, you know, this kind of like open sourcing of information, it's gotten to the point where, you know, for one thing, you don't need schools anymore. You need teachers. But I really think that, you know, the whole behemoth of a public school could be replaced by like, you know, fire the 80 teachers at the school and all the support staff. And, you know, bulldoze the buildings or turn them into something, something useful. And,
well, think about how inefficient a school, first off, the school, the model of it is as old as Rome, but it's essentially like you're going to build a building, you're going to fill it with desks and chairs, and you're going to take up an hour of a highly educated person's life to talk to 30 people.
To talk to children too. Yeah. I mean, really, like literally, I think that those 80 teachers in that building could easily be replaced by, you know, probably the 5 or 6 best teachers in that building who are willing to actually work for their living and not be on some fascist pension plan that's, you know, government enforced with guns. Like literally take the 5 or 6 best people there and just have people pay them in chickens. Oh, that's the libertarian rubric, the libertarian thing.
You integrate the curriculum into some video game and you talk to kids over some like audio system in their video game.
You
teach a whole class by building a guild. That's what you do.
Yeah. I mean, you can there's actually a lot of educational software and games and things that like promise like makes learning fun, but really it's always designed by mostly designed by like square people who are trying to not only make a buck, but like they don't really understand what kids want. You know, they do market research that's not really done right to try to figure out what kids want. You could literally make environments for learning. I don't know if they would be video games or websites or tutorials or books or all of the above or, you know, a room full of stuff. You could literally make learning so fun that you could not stop kids from doing it. And that's how you teach people, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, all you have to do to get kids to not want to stop learning is to not traumatize them from learning. I wanted to read books. I ate up books until I was told to read books, and then I wasn't interested at all.
I cut class to go to the library and read books.
Yeah.
Literally.
I used to wrap existing books in the skins of school books so that I appeared to be reading the class book in class when I was really reading like Star Trek technical manuals or something like that.
Yeah. And you know, who would build the roads? Probably people who snuck Star Trek technical manuals in grade school.
Yeah, you know, and to tell you the truth, I've used that information far more than whatever they were learning. So
yeah. School is so square.
Literally, it's all square. It's cubes. Hallways and
yeah, when really like you know, that thing called Khan Academy that's online, like literally you can learn anything kindergarten through 12 and, you know, 4 years of college level, probably everything except medical school. I don't think you could become a doctor from that. I don't think they have, you know, advanced surgical
techniques.
Yeah,
anything that involved lab, you couldn't do that. You could do any sort of information-based curriculum that way, but you couldn't really do like art studio or science lab or medical, what is it, like an internship or whatever.
Yeah, but you could certainly have a really good background to go intern with somebody. And schools were very resistant of this, you know, kind of in the same way that about 8 years ago, the publisher of Encyclopedia Britannica wrote an open letter to the publishing industry saying why Wikipedia was bad, you know, and why it wasn't as good as having these, you know, this set of books that cost $900 that gets updated every 4 years. And it's basically the point now where like Encyclopedia Britannica sales are almost of physical books, other than to, you know, government controlled school libraries, are down to almost zero. And
I'll bet half our audience doesn't remember what Encyclopedia Britannica was.
I'll bet I'll bet very few of them remember encyclopedia salesmen door to door. That was a thing. Yeah. When I was a little kid, that still happened.
Yeah, me too. I remember there was a Penn and Teller routine about that where Penn was trying to, or maybe it was Teller, was trying to sell it to him, and he got the guy to just buy W. This was a Friends episode, maybe. I don't remember now. But yeah.
Did you ever see the episode with Penn and Teller on West Wing?
No, I still haven't watched West Wing.
They do a magic trick in the White House, you know, in front of the president. It's for his daughter's birthday party, but it's like the president and all his cabinet and, you know, his family and about, you know, 200 muckety muckety friends in the White House. Penn and Teller are the magicians for this party. And they They do a magic trick where they roll an American.
Saw the president in half.
No, almost. Okay. They roll an American flag up in a copy of the Constitution and burn the flag without burning the Constitution. Burn the flag until it's gone and then open the Constitution. And it's this kind of like minarchist lesson, like, you know, about free speech. Like basically, you can burn the flag and it doesn't alter, you know, the rights enumerated in the Constitution. It's kind of square, but for the White House, it's like, it's anarchy, man. It's mind blowing. And afterwards, like the president's cabinet has people like going up to Penn and Teller, like, we need to release a statement. Like, you didn't actually burn a flag. That was a magic trick, right? And he's like, well, I don't know. You saw it. And they're like, did you actually burn a flag? And they're like, you're asking a magician to reveal his tricks.
That's great.
Yeah. So what's on our topics today? We've introduced
socialism for packages.
All right. Yeah. I'm going to tell my continuing the post office versus me when we get back from the market. And then you'll tell FedEx versus you, which without the government.
It's not FedEx, it's customs.
It's customs. Yeah, there you go. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Shiny badges on your jacket, shiny badges.
This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
So we're going to talk about socialism. Ooh, that was kind of hot mic. Don't want a hot mic. Okay. Let's talk about socialism. There's a little bit of leakage near the last bit that we're going to talk about socialism for packages, part two. We did a whole show on this the other day, but Davi apparently isn't all caught up on the fiend. So he didn't hear about the post office touching me in bad places. So I order these vapes. My wife and I order these vape liquids from the plumeroom.com, which is a great company that makes gourmet level cookery of plume of vape. And it's really good stuff. Nicotine vape for your vaping tool.
Is plume another word for vape? I like that.
Well, a plume of vape, yes, when you exhale.
Yeah,
so, cool. So I've ordered... They're a great company, and this has nothing to do with them. This is about the post office. We've ordered from them about every 2 weeks for a couple of years, probably. I mean, we're probably one of their better customers, I think. And our package recently did not arrive. Like, it was supposed to come on Saturday. We searched it online, and it said it was delivered to our front door like 12 minutes earlier. So we went out there and looked, and it wasn't out there. It was not out there. And so... We contacted the post office. I just went next door to a couple neighbors to see if it got misdelivered. So Monday, I contact the post office and talk to the guy, get insulted by the first guy, and then finally talk to a guy who knows what he's doing, sort of. And he searches it and comes back and calls me back 10 minutes later, which is kind of surprising for the post office. He actually did what he said he was going to do. And he called me back and told me the address of where it was delivered. It was misdelivered. So... I trundle out in the snow to that in freezing weather to that address. It's around the corner, and it's this house I know. It's like the black sheep house on the block. It's the house where people pull up at all hours of day and night and stay about 5 minutes, and they're always blasting the hip hop music in their pickup trucks when they pull up. And the guy who lives there has kind of mad dogged me before. It's kind of like wannabe gangsters, you know. Young hipsters that old people like me are afraid of. No, just but this is also the house that was raided by the police with a bunch of guys with guns drawn, which, you know, isn't to say that it's not to say they're bad people, but something happened there that a bunch of goons with guns showed up. So it's just that there's nothing else like that in this neighborhood. So I knock on the door, there's no one there. I go back home, I do a show about it, and then call the post office today, and they tell me, okay, so first of all, if anything ever gets misdelivered to your house, don't think you can just keep it, because they have a little GPS handheld thing. They know where it was delivered. But what they told me was that the guy, and it's the new postman, the one who's young and like kind of inexperienced. So he actually scanned.
The idealistic young postman who thinks he's going to change the system from the inside.
Yeah. So he scanned it. He did something he's not supposed to do. They're supposed to scan it at your front door, but he scanned it walking down the street in front of that house and then walked around the corner and delivered it to my next door neighbor, who is someone I definitely don't mind going and talking to. And I trust that guy, the next door neighbor. I know him. And he said it was never delivered there either. So this package is completely lost. And, I'm going to file paperwork and try to get it back. And the plume room actually said, you know, if I show them that paperwork, they're actually going to replace my order free, which is mind blowing. And
that's cool.
And you know, the government would never do that. I'll probably get a check for like 20% of what the thing was worth from the post office 6 months from now or something, if ever, because I did not insure it. And they do have an option to insure it, but it costs a little bit. It's whatever the post office charges. And net, if we'd insured every package and then lost this one and got it immediately, you know, compensated for, we saved money by not buying the insurance. So maybe it's the cost of doing business with the government delivering things. When we come back, Dobby Parker is going to tell you about a bigger deal that he has with customs going on right now.
Yeah.
On the Freedom Fiends. Now we're going to talk about South-oriented maps. World maps that are upside down from what
you
normally
know. All the various
know.
Orientations, because it's a circle. You can look at it from any angle. It's
yep.
a globe. It's a sphere.
Yeah. That famous picture of the Earth taken from space, the first picture of the whole Earth that was used on the Whole Earth catalog, it was originally upside down from what they had, but then they flipped it. NASA flipped it so people wouldn't be upset by it. Status.
Such fragile little psyches.
The government and the people who love them.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Because the world is so stupid sometimes. And before we talk about copyleft, and we have decided not to talk about upside down maps, basically I'll just tell you really quick, the whole thing is that there are people who are adamant that all the maps be changed to be upside down from what they are now. Because there's really no reason North should be at the top. There's no, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It's made up. So there's people who want to switch that on all the maps because they say that the current map gives the impression that North is good and South is bad. Because it's North is first. So I don't really know what to think about that.
That seems like a bit of a stretch to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, perception.
Like, are they trying to say that, like, this is why Africa is a squalor? Because there's much more sort of historical evidence other than some sort of,
yeah,
you know, subconscious sort of up equals good thing.
Yeah. I think it's just a dumb argument. And I mean, you know, presentation does influence perception. But I agree with you, that Davy Barker, that's not why. You know, that's not why a lot of the countries in South America have less, you know, money per person than in the North America. It's because there's more socialist and Marxist countries in South America.
Yeah. It's either that or because they were colonies and everything was robbed from them at some point.
Yep. So it's partly.
So it's a combination, right? Like, it's either colonialism or it's communism. So.
Yeah. And, you know, Marxism is a childish, idiotic idea. That's basically everything should be good and we'll kill everyone who disagrees and take their stuff. And I guess that makes sense to children or people who have the mind of a child. But it actually, I think part of the reason Marxism is spread so much is because it makes sense to people who are oppressed, who haven't heard something better, who haven't heard libertarianism, anarcho-capitalism, and voluntarism. Like, if you are living in squalor under a violent oppressor who doesn't let you have many rights, you know, and kills you if you try to have them. It makes sense when some guys show up with AK-47s and give you AK-47s and say, the workers should control everything, you know? I mean, really, in anarcho-capitalism, the workers control everything, too, if they want to. You know, they control their own work.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, it's probably also something to do with the fact that, you know, the tyrants and the colonialists throughout history have always sort of claimed to be operating under the banner of capitalism. And so that's the taste that it's left in people's mouth.
Yeah. And it's not really capitalism. It's always corporatism or crapitalism or fascism. But yeah. That's a good segue. I was going to use the workers would keep their own rights if they want to segue into copyleft. But actually, we teased this a little bit, at least off radio. And this would make a better segue. The corporatism, capitalism, and fascism can segue quite well into your experience with the U.S. Customs Department.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, you know, one of the things that I do is I do shinybadges.com and I sell lapel pins and various other merchandise.
How's that working out for you? How's that working out for you?
It's going well. But, you know, something else that I do is I design pins for other clients and things. And sometimes those are relatively large orders. So
you also have just started, as far as I know, your first ever foray into designing art for software installers.
That's true.
Yeah.
I did a lot of the art for Freedom Fiends. Yeah that's for sure.
No, for Fiend Phone, the new, the new install. You've branded the website, or we've branded it with your 5 or 6 banners that you made in 10 minutes that were way better than the ones that I made in a day. But the installer now shows some really cool art by Davy Barker, and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Thank you for your service.
So, you know, sometimes I get this sort of like promotional material designed for clients and things, and I have it shipped to my house, and then I sort of parse it out because a lot of times they'll want it parsed out to other places, or because I want to put my own marketing stuff in or whatever. And that's never really been a problem other than like the occasional like customs bill that comes in. And I usually call them and complain about it and tell them why I don't want to pay it. And sometimes I do. And sometimes they make it disappear. Did you know that sometimes customs bills will disappear if you complain?
No.
But this one, they actually held up the package. So apparently, like, after you pass some sort of threshold of declared value, it's no longer just like we're going to record this in our system. We're going to actually hold your package until you give us some form or number or whatever, which means that I have like literally like a multi-$1,000 order that is sitting in a customs office somewhere waiting for me to give them an EIN number, which is a tax number.
It's like a social security number for a company. But generally,
I don't have one. I operate as a person.
And like, generally, you can give, you know, most forms I've seen that ask for an EIN say, you know, EIN or social security number or EIN or other tax identification number, which includes social security number.
Yeah. So I'm looking at this form that they sent me that they want me to fill out. And it actually does. It says there's an asterisk and then it says, you know, if social security number here, go to 2B. But the people who I called at FedEx to try to get this resolved didn't know that. And so they're going to be calling me tomorrow with somebody who has a better idea what's going on. But I don't blame FedEx. Like, I don't feel like FedEx should have any obligation to know all of the sort of bizarre laws that customs enforcement comes up with.
Whereas the post office, it's all their fault. It really is, because they're the post office and it's in the Constitution, people.
Well, yeah, because they're confederates of the aggressing agency, right? Like the post office and the IRS fly the same flag. Federal Express is a different federation entirely. And, but yeah, so essentially, like I have a multi-$1,000 order that's like pending and it might be shipped back to China if I don't get this resolved by January 16th, apparently.
Oh, so it's supply, you're not shipping product to someone in another country. It's your manufacturer shipping to you.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Which, you know, there's no financial or commerce or relationship. There's no reason for this holdup other than, you know, the IRS wants a cut of it. They saw something valuable and they're like, waylay that ship. We need to raid it and search 10%.
I have a suggestion. You know, this is the kind of thing that often a letter from a lawyer can take care of and explain. And you live with a lawyer. So why don't you ever write a lawyer letter?
To who?
I don't know. To the people that are holding your, to the goons in ties. Yes. Or to FedEx. Maybe. Explaining, you know, that the SS number is the same as an EIN for that purpose.
It's SS. Just, you know what it is? It's that I got the, they didn't, here's the first thing is they didn't tell me. They sent a message back to the manufacturer to say that this happened. And then the manufacturer contacted me and the manufacturer is in China. So I didn't get this notification until 10 p.m. you know, this evening or 9 p.m., which meant that everybody who was informed at FedEx had already gone home. So they're going to call me in the morning.
I'm sure there's at least one person listening in his mother's basement saying, "Ew, you're a statist. You're dealing with customs. I thought you were an agorist, man."
You don't have any choice.
I know.
Believe me, I would much rather
if you could have,
it's like saying, man, you deal with the TSA, you're an agorist, you shouldn't travel. Like,
or you get a driver's license, you
shouldn't drive because you're an agorist. No, this is business. Yeah. This is, things get manufactured places and they cross imaginary lines. And when they do, the relevant gang shows up and wants to search through their stuff for valuables.
Yeah. I mean, if you could get your badges and things manufactured for the same price as quickly and as well, by little pot smoking hippies with dreadlocks in Vermont or New Hampshire who have leaves in their furry sweaters.
I do when I can. Yeah, I use Krizzle's buttons for buttons because you can manufacture buttons.
I kind of just described Krizzle, but he's not in Vermont.
But no, you can't. And I tried. I went looking for a U.S. manufacturer for these sorts of pens. And you know what? Every single one of them was just ordering them from China, upselling them a little bit, and then selling them to me for more.
Krizzle,
I couldn't find these things being manufactured in the U.S.
Krizzle is like the hardest working, most reliable hippie I've ever done business with, man. That guy's
amazing. He's awesome.
Yeah.
You know what he doesn't have is a website, though. Like, you have to go to
Etsy
or something. Yeah, I don't. I would love to plug his stuff, but I'm not. Just Google Krizzle's buttons.
Kriggles.
You can find it on You can find it on Facebook.
Facebook.
But yeah, totally reliable. He
sounds like Spicoli.
Things right away.
He sounds like Spicoli on the phone, which makes you think he would not be reliable, but he's very reliable.
I've never talked to him on the phone.
Yeah, Well, that's what I use. At this point, I just email him. I just send him, you know, I have a bunch of different button designs that he has on record that he's done for me. And what I do is I send him a picture of the buttons I want, like three or four pictures of like these two buttons, this two buttons, and this one button, and say I want, you know, 300 of each or whatever. And then just PayPal him the money. And like, you know, within 2 or 3 days, he sends me a tracking number. The guy's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of which, I got a whole bunch of new Pork Scouts buttons in just recently. I've got the new free aid first responder button, and I've got the question obedience button, and I've got...
Are they printed full size?
A couple others. Yeah. The printing is fixed now.
Which was not Crizzle's fault.
They're all on the website and everything. It was my fault.
It was basically you were so pro, you messed it up, whereas I just sent him a picture and don't have like cut lines or anything, and he knows where to put them. But you did like page layout with cut lines, and they didn't allow for the wrap or something, so they were too small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's that I added the wrap and didn't tell him, and so he added a wrap to my wrap, and as a result, the art was very small.
Too much wrap for the royal eye. Okay, so let's talk about copyleft. What is copyleft, Davi Barker?
What is copyleft? It's essentially not copywriting, but
that's not true.
It means, I don't know, fill me in, correct
it's,
me.
It's using copyright law to offer rights to distribute copies of modified versions of a work and requiring that the same rights be preserved in modified versions of the work. So basically it's like an open source license that is a virus, a good virus, in that anything made as a derivative of that copyleft work has to be under the same license. Now, the GNU public license has this, the GNU public GPL for software, all of the Creative Commons licenses for, you know, printed and written and recorded musical works have that. There are other licenses that are considered open source that do not go under that, like the BSD license or the MIT license, which we're going to get into a little bit here. It's an interesting topic. And you know, this is the one place that of intellectual property law that I probably know the most about is copyright, because it affects what I do. Cause I have, you know, I've written books for pay for companies. The interesting thing is like those companies own the books and the right to do what they want to with them. And they paid me for it and they pay me royalties. But my name is on the copyright, cause that's how they do it. But, yeah. Stefan Kinsella cannot correct me on this. He won't correct me on this because he's a patent and trademark attorney. So I can just talk out my butt about copyright.
There you go.
Whenever I'm wrong about patent or trademark, he corrects me, which is good.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hey, there's some Squiscar Squig Elves from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Guns and Weed, Buy Sheep for Sheep on Sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Je suis Charlie. And I'm talking about my cat, Charlie. We are all my cat, Charlie.
I'm going with je suis me, which means I am me.
we are all me. Yeah.
Think for yourself, schmuck.
Yeah, a lot of tribalism comes out whenever there's a public event, but I don't want to talk about that. You just were telling me during the break that you're getting a lot of comments in French on your posts on the internet now.
Yeah, I don't speak French.
Yeah, but Google.
This is America. If you're gonna post a comment on an American website, learn American.
You know, I think Google is to blame for the fact that people have a socialist attitude about software. Like that, they not only that everything should be free, but that they just go make it in my flavor now. You know, because Google just makes everything because they have all the money in the world. Because they were really kind of free market for a while, but they've pretty much become part of the government at this point, I would say. Yeah. So we're talking about copyleft, which is it's a specific type of open source license. Oh, I haven't said it this hour. Barack Obama is a liar. He's a socialist and his feet stink.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So copyleft is it's any open source license where if you make a derivative of the thing that is open source licensed with that license, you have to use the same the same license. So it's kind of a virus that protects everything else from being used for evil afterwards. And a lot of people, I wouldn't even say used for evil, but a lot of people don't really understand what open source means. And there's different flavors of it. There's people who say you have to use the word free software instead. Now, that's the Richard Stallman camp, and he's the guy who basically codified the first popular open source license, the GNU Public License 1.0, which is now up to 3.0. And it basically is like 10 pages of legalese that basically comes down to do whatever you want with this as long as anything you do with it has the same license on it. That's all it says for 5,000 words or something. So
I like that. So it's just sort of like protecting yourself from being copyrighted over top of, right?
Right, right. But it's written by Richard Stallman, who is a brilliant thinker. He helped come up with Linux, but he's also literally a socialist. He describes himself as one, and he is a persnickety guy. Like, he's kind of like the language police of open source. Like, you know, if you put something out with his license, you can't call it open source. And he will personally send you an email. He's done this to me. He'll personally send you an email chiding you if you call something open source. He wants you to call it free software. The thing is, the term free software means something else to 99% of the world. It means software you don't have to pay for. To the point where it's kind of like people who say we need a law to say that English is the first language in America. You know, it's kind of that kind of word policing. It's like he has pretty much lost the battle of the free market of words and is devoting most of his time now not to programming, but to sending email to, you know, software companies, small and large, saying you're doing it wrong. But I don't know. I will read something from Richard Stallman telling me I'm doing it wrong more than I will from someone who's never gotten it together to help, you know, bring some new software to the world, like most people who tell me I'm doing it wrong. But so there are other licenses, including the BSD license, which we're using for Fiend Phone. And it's an interesting license. It's only three clauses. You know, it's like, it's probably, 40 words or something plus a disclaimer. So it's probably 100 words. And it's very simple. It's very simply written. But things under the BSD license, basically, it basically boils down to you can do whatever you want with this, including making derivations of it that do not use this license and our proprietary software. And Richard Stallman hates that. But I like that license because it opens it up to any use possible. You know, and if you want to spread an idea as much as possible, you don't want it just to be used by hippies who say everything should be free, but you want it also used by major corporations. I want Fiend Phone, I want Google to put it in the Android phone. I want them to do that.
Well, that's essentially what made it possible for Quark to take all of the sort of freelance extensions and incorporate them into their own software, right? Like if you didn't allow them to do it in a proprietary sense, Quark would have been unable to do that.
I don't know if they had a restriction on licenses of extensions for their program or not, if they had a user agreement that said that. I don't remember. I didn't really know about user agreements and licenses then, so I never looked at it. But, the thing with software, too, is like these laws that we're talking about are only covering the code itself. Like, basically, someone can write completely different code that does the same functionality, and it's usually not an issue. So that's probably what they did for the most part, I would assume. We'll be back with more about Robert Anton Wilson's influence on copyleft.
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Freedom Fiends. All copy left, all the time. Actually, not all copy left. So I was saying that the license that we're using on Fiendphone is the BSD Three Claws license, which is not copy left. It is open source, but it means that people could use it for proprietary systems if they wanted to. And we're fine with that. And the reason we picked that, we used the GNU public license on Meowbit, but we use the BSD license because there are dependencies within Fiendphone that are not compatible. They're covered with BSD, covered by the BSD license, like the Opus codec. So it's not compatible with the GNU public license, so we couldn't use that. So that's it. But we're going to talk about the Principia. How do you say this thing, Davi Barker?
I say Principia Discordia. If I'm feeling eccentric, I say Principia Discordia.
And apparently, there's a holy war within that religion designed as the religion masquerading as a joke, masquerading as a religion. And here on the Freedom Fiends, which is a radio show playing a podcast playing a radio show, or is it the other way around? I don't really know. What do you think, Davi?
Yeah, there are multiple extremely funny religious wars going on between different sects and cabals of Discordians all the time.
It's a riddle. It's a riddle wrapped in an enigma, wrapped in a conundrum.
That's hidden inside of a Rubik's cube.
That's from the movie JFK by Oliver Stone.
the Principia Discordia is purported to be a religious tome of the Discordians, which is Discordia is the Roman goddess of chaos, confusion, discord, bureaucracy, and aftermath.
Isn't this made up by science fiction writers?
Yes, it is.
Of course it is. Yeah.
But they were, I guess, one of the first to use the copyleft, or at least they influenced the drafting of this sort of licensing system. And it's because the original Principia was just noted as all rights reversed. It wasn't copywritten or copyrighted.
Yeah, which has no legal meaning. And basically what Richard Stallman did was he took that idea and had a bunch of lawyers hammer it into a long document that has a legal meaning.
But the cool thing about the Principia is that everyone is free to publish it, which means that the original Lumpanix yellow cover is the first edition, and I think you can still get it, but it's rare. But every time like it goes out of print and somebody still wants it, they just said, well, I'll just publish my own. Yeah. So there are currently, I think, 6 or 7 official publications, but there's lots of little independent publications, and it's considered sort of a rite of passage for a Discordian to sort of include their own gospel at the end, to like write a prequel or an appendix and publish their own version.
Well, what makes one version official and one not official if there's no governing body and no copyright on it?
It shows up on Wikipedia.
So if you can win the edit war with people who live in their mother's basement and are master Wikipedia editors with a lot of juice, then it's official. Is that what you're saying?
Like for example, I claim to have written or published the 5th edition of the Principia Discordia when I was in college under Norton Press, which was the student publishing house that I was working at, because Steve Jackson Games claimed the 4th, and there was no other after that, and we wanted our own with our whole appendix about Emperor Norton. But it wasn't very popular. We probably only made 400 editions of that one. And so now there are other people claiming to be the 5th edition. And I'm not going to dispute them because I live in a world where there can be more than one fifth edition.
Did this have a, was this an influence on the Book of the Subgenius?
Yes. Yes, it was.
I didn't know that, but it sounds like it is. I was really fascinated with that book, and I've actually probably bought 10 or 12 different copies of it over the years to give to people. I actually quote something kind of often. You know, I say like, oh, I was reading some book and I didn't like it, and I threw the book against the wall. So
yeah,
there's this book that we're talking about is kind of a takeoff on a bunch of different religions, kind of mixed with LSD, kind of mixed with, you know, 60s door-to-door encyclopedia salesmanship and a whole bunch of other influences. Yeah. But there are people who take it really seriously, which is kind of weird. And their deity, or their messiah is Bob. And
Bob Dobbs, yeah.
And Bob is...
You probably know Bob Dobb.
You've probably seen the stencil, yeah. At least in the Bay Area.
So this is a great example of a sectarian war inside the Discordian movement. There is the more popular Church of Scientology, Church of the Subgenius. And then there's the less popular...
It's influenced by the Church of Scientology, too, for sure.
Oh, well, it's the other way around. The Church of Scientology is influenced by the Church of the Subgenius.
No, Church of Scientology has been around longer. I think since the 50s.
The apocryphal story is that... Well, whatever.
Back off your mic a little bit. This is a teaching gospel, sorry. And you're getting plosives.
So the other sect of Discordians is called the Church of Slack. And the Church of Slack claims that Bob Dobbs is a lying offender of the faith who is hoarding all the slack for himself.
Slack is their nirvana, or their...
It's their manna. It's their...
Yeah. It's what you want to attain in being a good subgenius.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, the Church of the Subgenius says essentially that you should send slack to Bob Dobbs, and then Bob Dobbs will impart slack on you, which is what you do by buying his books.
Well, you're actually supposed to send $1 to the sacred post office box in Dallas, Texas, as I recall. But here's the thing. Okay. Right. That book, I turned my friend Charlie Kramer onto that book, and Charlie Kramer is now, can I say this on the air? Charlie Kramer is an attorney for the World Bank.
Okay,
which is you know, part of the overlords, you know,
so the slack is very strong with him.
it's the people that pull the strings on the Federal Reserve. I had friends back in the day who've gone on to, you know, he's a really good friend of mine still, and I have another friend who's like a Wall Street attorney managing funds of funds, whatever that is. And you know, I used to have a friend that worked for the Department of Homeland Security. I've had some weird friends in my life, but so Charlie Kramer is a really great guy. He's also a great metal guitarist, and actually some of his music is in one of the bumpers in every Freedom Fiend show. The song My Gun Keeps You Honest. It's like industrial metal, and it's really precise rhythm guitar playing, and I couldn't play it well enough to sound that like Ministry or something. So I had him do it. Mm-hmm. But I turned him on in the Book of the Subgenius when we were about 20 or 21, and he was playing in a hardcore punk band called The Landlords, and also playing in a band called The Happy Flowers that more people may have heard of. It's a noise band. And I met him at, he was going to UVA, and I met him at, he's going to law school at UVA, and I met him at lunch one day, and I had this book with me, and we went to, at UVA, this, you know, Thomas Jefferson designed university in Charlottesville, Virginia, where I was living. I wasn't going to school, but I was living there. I met him for lunch there, and we went to this kind of like, it's called the Greek Amphitheater, I think. It's this outdoor amphitheater that probably holds 800 or 900 people, that's styled like a Greek amphitheater with cement, you know, rounded step. You know, like you sit on cement, and they have concerts there. And a lot of people have their lunch there. It was a sunny day. It was in the summer. I bring him this book, or I show him this book, and he starts reading it, and he's just like laughing hysterically. And like other students are just staring at him like, what's wrong with this guy? And we start reading it out loud, and we start preaching it from this book. And we get this little like crowd of like 30 people around us just going like, this is entertaining. Let's watch this. And at one point in the book, in all capital letters, totally out of context, it says, throw this book against the wall right now. And Charlie read that, and he threw the book against one of these metal steps, and people were just like applauded. They just thought it was the weirdest thing.
That's awesome.
Thing. Yeah. So I often say that about books, like, oh, I didn't like that book, and I threw it against the wall. That's a reference to the Book of the Subgenius.
There's a reference to that in a book I just got my little brother. I have a brother who's a teenager, and I got him a book called Destroy This Book. And the book is full of instructions on how to destroy the book. So you open the book and it says, tear out this page, or, you know, spread mayonnaise on this page, or whatever, right? And one of the pages really says, throw this book against the wall.
Wow.
So I wonder if that's a reference, or, you know, it's possible Destroy This Book was inspired by that in the first place.
It's kind of a meta book too, you know, like Steal This Book. And Steal This Book,
yeah.
One thing I heard about Steal This Book was that, and you know, it's like Marxism in the title there, like, don't pay, steal this book. But it didn't get, it would have been more popular, except a lot of bookstores wouldn't carry it. And there's actually it's the first book I ever saw that had negative blurbs on the back of it, like from publishers who turned it down. And my first novel, I had negative blurbs of like people saying bad things about me as a person on the back of
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But one of the quotes on the back was like from some, you know, muckety muck at some major publishing company who said, this book will end free speech as we know it. And I can't think of a better glowing, you know, comment on
that's
a book.
Cool.
Yeah. But
I put negative tutorials on my website.
There you go. The problem was, like, even the stores that wanted to carry the book stopped carrying it because people kept stealing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's right there in the title.
Yep.
Like, who are you going to listen to, the bookstore or the author, really?
Hey, I just got an email from Joel who said, great show, as always. Here are some links to some microphone porn. And that's just pictures of microphones. It's not naked people. Yeah, I'm digging
this.
Does
he think that we're done with the show?
I don't know,
man. Is he sending letters back from the future?
No, it's the equivalent of callers. We don't take callers. So people, Nathan the Ninja Squirrel emailed us earlier, but we're on to another topic by the time I looked at it. So yeah, man, Discordia. You know, there was actually a woman one town over from where I was born. I grew up in Westfield, New York, and one town over, Sherman, New York. There was a woman who got her kids taken away by CPS because she was a practitioner of the Church of the Subgenius. Like, they didn't understand it, and they thought it was a cult and it was a bad influence on children. And she had to fight to get her kids back. And
that's nuts.
Yeah, it is nuts, man. Government. So
I mean, I know people that are like real hardcore Discordians. Like, they named their daughter Eris and stuff like this. So.
Hmm. Yeah, but they're in
California. I mean, it is a cult, but it's a self-referential cult.
Yours are in California, are they not?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, see, there you go. This is in Sherman, New York, which is... New York State, upstate New York, you know, all of New York except New York City is pretty much, in some way, the weirdestly conservative, like, not just politically conservative, but, like, socially, like... frightened of things that are new and unusual of anywhere I've ever lived. It's kind of sad. I can hear you clicking. What are you clicking?
Sorry. That's sorry. Okay. I was, you know,
it's doing the power. It's the
Freedom
power,
Fiends memeing.
It's the power of the Fiend Phone. I'm just pointing out that, like, with Skype, you wouldn't hear that. Fiend Phone, it's you true. Hear everything, man. It's good. No, keep clicking. I like the sound of your labor. You should be paid a penny a click under Marx's theory of labor value.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Love The Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog The Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review The Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
And you know, you don't agree with the hosts on the Freedom Fiends, we don't care.
Go start your own radio show.
Go start your own radio show. Exactly. And I give you explicit directions on how to do so at creamyradioaudio.com. That's kind of my out for not taking calls and making fun of anyone who writes us that says they don't, that we're doing it wrong, is like literally not only I tell you go start your own radio show, I tell you how and how to make it sound as good on no money, how to get caviar sound on a cat food budget. So tell me about Poe's Law. I got some
Poe's Law. I came across this on the internet, and I love me some internet laws because, you know, they're crowdsourced and that's more legitimate than written laws. And so Poe's Law is essentially, I'll just read it. It says, without a blatant display of humor, it is impossible to create a parody of extremism or fundamentalism without someone mistaking it for the real thing.
And so I've seen that so many times, man.
It's everywhere. Now that I've seen it, it cannot be unseen. But yeah, essentially, like, you watch something and you're like, you can't tell. Like, does this person really think this, or is this person making fun of people that think this?
I've seen it happen to fiends lately. I've seen it happen to Lou. Lou has made this great series of memes that are all kind of plays on the thing that cops said after, you know, some cop or chief of cops said after choking that guy for selling Lucy's. Some cop said, you know, if you don't want to get choked, obey the law or something like that. So Lou made this whole, I'm assuming that's where it's from. Lou made this whole series of memes that have been quite popular on the face beefs that are things like, I can't think of any right now, but the one I can think of is the one that's getting all of the play that got all of the people thinking it was racist. There was a picture of the lady that wouldn't go to the back of the bus. What's her name?
Rosa Parks.
Yeah, of Rosa Parks sitting on the bus getting arrested. And the caption said, you know, if you don't want to get arrested, go to the back of the bus. And people who weren't in on the joke from seeing the memes originally and who couldn't get the humor on their own thought it was like a KKK meme or something, I think. I mean, they were like just slaying him for it.
Weird.
Yeah.
People who can't take a joke.
People who can't people take who a
are,
joke.
People are humoristically challenged.
Or yeah. Oh, I remember another one. I remember another one. It was the Revolutionary War, and it was, you know, something. It was you know, the American Revolution, and it was the American side shooting at the Redcoats or being shot at by the Redcoats, and it said something like, you know, if you don't want to be shot at by Redcoats, pay the taxes on your tea or something like that. So yeah, that's a good example of it.
The song that you sent me today is a perfect example of it.
Oh man, we were going to play that, but we'll have to save that for another day.
But yeah, it's like this patriotic, like, you know, thank you America for whatever. It sounds exactly like the Team America
that's what
theme
Diana
song.
Said. Yeah.
And so I'm like, this has got to be satire. This guy's got to be joking, right? And it's like, no, it's real. Nope. This is what this guy really thinks.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like a cross between Rush and Bryan Adams. We'll play it again sometimes because that's we're doing visual humor on the radio, or the equivalent of it. We're describing a song without any way for people to find it and saying it's stupid. We'll cover it on a different show. So tell me more about Poe's Law there, Davi.
Well, I mean, that's just the gist of it, but it's essentially like let's say you're really a hardcore extremist and you believe something absurd, like that the world is flat or something. And so you're gonna make these sort of memes or videos arguing that the world is flat, and you're gonna share them on Facebook. A person's gonna watch that video, and if they don't know that you're serious, you're gonna look like a parody of yourself. Like there's a point, there's a tipping point where the absurd is a joke in and of itself.
And the Freedom Fiends transcend that and dance around on top of it all at the same time.
Yep, because we are both serious and joking all the time. We are a satire of ourselves.
And we're a radio show parodying a podcast parodying a radio show. I don't know if parodying is the word.
It's disguised as.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Worms. Thank you for your service, Davi Barker. It's been a good show. It's been fun, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Worms.
worms. I feel good.
Constitution, independence, independence. Words of wisdom in the valor, balancing political power. Independence, independence. Government of the people, government by the people, government for. Founding fathers, revolutionary daughters, independence, independence, endowed by our creator, inalienable rights of nature, independence, independence, government of the people, government by the people, government. Believe. Freedom isn't free, you got to fight for liberty. Independence.